hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts Jacob Cazell, Jeff Chaney, and Todd Singer.
Welcome, everybody, back to episode 124 of the No Better Than Average podcast, a nice, evenly divisible by so many factorials episode. I am your host, Jacob. Along with me are my co-hosts, Jeff and Todd. Jeff, how are you doing this fine evening?
You know, I've had better evenings. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, you've got the technical bugs.
I do. My decided it didn't want to work at first, so I made the audible and went to my phone and plugged my phone in because it was like at 10%. I knew, okay, you know, my phone's at 10%. I need to plug it in. And I did that and was talking to you guys and it just died. So now I'm back on my computer again. And yeah, it's good times.
So there is a not zero chance that we are going to lose you at some point in this podcast, and you may or may not be back.
Yeah, I warned you guys already, and I'll warn the listening audience that if I get kicked off one more time, that's it. I am walking away. I'll take the message from above that I'm not supposed to do the podcast today. So yeah, that's been the. Been good stuff so far. We'll see how it goes.
Fair enough. Todd, how about you? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I'm rocking the Yodo Con Leche Imperial Stout tonight from Five Rabbit.
Nice.
Excellent brewery up Chicago way. And it's very good. And this is a bomber. So you may start to hear me, you know, trail off towards the end of the episode. We'll see how it goes.
Well, we all have to, like, you know, try our hardest, because I am sipping on a fine glass of inexpensive bourbon, which I threw a couple splashes of bitters and a few maraschino cherries for a poor man's Manhattan.
It's got a good color.
Yeah, it looks nice.
I'm drinking water. because I drank enough for myself for like 2.5 weeks last episode. So
yeah, Jeff, you were feeling no pain at all. I've got a question for you guys. Maybe you know. I have started to see everywhere. This is it pronounced Yuengling or Yuengling or Yingling beer?
Yuengling.
What is the deal with that? Like, it just has all of a sudden out of nowhere appeared, and it is everywhere.
So that's the big deal. It's from the oldest brewery in the United States, 1829, founded. Okay. This came up at a party Saturday night that I went to. And it is a lager that you could not get. It's been in Ohio for a while, but you couldn't get it in Indiana until a few weeks ago. And so everybody's advertising it.
Boy, are they.
Yeah.
Is it any good? Should I pick up some and give it a try?
To me, it is a slightly improved version of Miller Lite.
Oh.
So if you like Miller Lite, you're going to like Yuengling.
I'm not a huge fan. I just have just seen it like all of a sudden everywhere, and I've never seen it before, didn't know anything about it, and wondered if it was something I should pay attention to or if I should give it a go. Apparently, they make ice cream.
I did not know that.
I just went to their Wikipedia page.
I'll admit, this is one that I attribute to the hype train and the fact that it was thought of as so good because you couldn't physically get it here.
But kind of like Coors used to be, right?
Exactly. But I've tried it. It's fine. It's a good lager, but I don't consider it anything special. But that's also partly my own preference, because growing up, before microbrews, lager was about the only style you could get. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, you know, I've had plenty of lagers. I want to try some other stuff. So no, I'm not really all that excited about Yuengling, but a lot of people are, because it actually is a very reasonably priced beer too. So
yeah,
it's a quality
it's
beer
bad.
At a good price. Yeah.
Well, interesting. Well,
if you like lagers,
maybe I'll pick up a sixer of it, because they have one, and I don't know if it would be disgusting or if it wouldn't be bad, but they have a pre-mixed black and tan in a can.
Yeah.
And I like a good black and tan, so I've been tempted by it, but I've only seen cases of it so far, and I'm not willing to commit to a whole case if it's just going to be disgusting.
You're right, I should try that. And then just, you know, we'll just meet for lunch and we can split it or something.
Ooh, I like the way you think. Awesome. Well,
because black and tan, I'd like to try the black and tan too.
Yeah, I like a good black and tan, so Can't go wrong there. I had an interesting afternoon. It was a birthday party for one of our nieces, and they did it at one of those climbing places I think you talked about a few weeks ago, Todd. And
I
got to think, holy cow, is that a good way to make money? Because what on earth could it cost to build one of those things? And they charge a lot of money to go in and climb up rock handholds and whatnot. It was interesting. I've never been in one of those places. And, I thought, well, it's all paid for, so I'll give it a go. And I went and got the funny shoes that you need. And I made it up to the red line, which is the line that you can climb up to without needing a belay. And then I realized I'm 40 years old, and I just had surgery on my shoulder 7 weeks ago. Yeah, I probably shouldn't be doing this. And I hobbled back down. And basically spent the rest of the afternoon nursing my shoulder, and it was quite painful. So
you know, I just want to point out, getting old sucks, because I was kind of volunteered to help the youth group at my daughter's church to do a car wash to raise some money on Saturday afternoon, and while I was there. No big deal. Felt fine. Woke up this morning, could barely walk. My hip hurt so bad. And I just like, are you kidding me? So yeah, I get it. Like, so you guys were talking about beer. I had a good beer last night.
Ooh.
I went to a local establishment that has like
Shallows.
I went to Shallows. And they have tons of different craft beers and stuff on draft. I had a Leinenkugel's Bavarian Doppelbock on draft, and it was quite tasty.
I have not tried that one.
I enjoyed Doppelbock, so I kind of knew what I was in for, but it was very good. I was highly impressed.
You know, their Shandy is pretty darn good. Their summer Shandy.
Yeah,
I like the Leinenkugel's Shandy.
I was the one that told you about that too. So.
Yeah.
I like Leinenkugel's a lot, so anyway.
They have a lot of good beers.
Yeah.
Well, and I want to digress for just a second, because I am now, Jeff, envisioning you in a pair of very tight cutoff jeans, just all soapy and rubbing yourself all over car windows.
Wild Things was the first thing that came to my mind.
Pour some sugar on me from Def Leppard is playing.
Oh, yeah, that would have been totally appropriate at the Catholic Church car wash. Yeah.
You know, there's appropriate and there's raising as much money as you possibly can. So
I'm pretty sure that people would pay me to put clothes back on. They'd be like, here's a 20, find a shirt.
Oh, but we can all dream.
If that's, I would consider that more on the nightmare side of the world rather than the dream. But you know, to each his own, I suppose. I guess there's, for every ugly fat dude that's out there, there's some ugly white dude that's willing to pay money to see him naked. I guess, apparently, since you're dreaming about me, I don't know. Kind of weird.
Fair enough. So everybody, now that we have gone off into this horrible digression, if you have a question, a comment, a rant, a rave, we would love to hear from you, and you can, as always, give our comment call-in line a call. You could talk to a robot the way God intended, not a real human, so social anxiety sufferers, rejoice. You will not have to be put on the spot and talk to one of us, and you can call that number, as always, 317-643-1212, and if you'd like to subscribe to the show newsletter, we would always love a new subscriber or two, and you can do that at nobettershow.com/join. We got some feedback last week right before we started recording from listener John, so we didn't get a chance to read it last week, but I thought we'd hit on it now. He wrote in and said the company was Lenovo, and the application was, I think, called Superfish. Not only were they intercepting all of your encrypted communications, but apparently they were not handling certificate errors correctly either. That little annoying, this site is not secure message you get if the server certificate expires or the name does not match, that was not always passed back to the user, so the user could be connecting to illegitimate sites, a fake PayPal or bank, and not know it. To get this to work, they had to loan their own certificate authority into your trusted certificate store, which means your browser or operating system would trust anything signed by them. And in addition, when I did a reinstall, it tried to load the app back in. The mechanism that they used is not uncommon to what corporate enterprises use today to monitor outgoing encrypted communications, called SSL intercept or deep inspection. It also tends to break things like client certificate authentication and applications that insist on their own trusted cert on the server they are communicating to. Enterprises try to break in to prevent viruses, trojans, malware, and such from coming in encrypted transmission, as well as monitor outgoing data for proprietary or confidential information. Think health records or client credit card information being sent via Gmail or Yahoo. So whenever anyone asks me what type of computer to get, I usually say not Lenovo. And that's interesting because recently I had a personal SSL certificate with a company called Starcom for my little Synology network storage device so that I could access it securely remotely. And I just noticed that when I had upgraded my web browser, Chrome, it stopped letting me in and did some reading. And apparently Google has decided that Star.com or Starcom is no longer a certificate authority that they are going to trust. So you definitely need to know who your CA is and make sure that there is some trust there because if they are doing funny things, and I guess a year and a half ago, Starcom was issuing certificates and not actually validating who was behind the certificates, you may find out that your website is no longer allowed to be accessed via SSL. Like I can no longer on new versions of Chrome access my Synology NAS. So definitely something to be aware of. I did learn through all of this that there is a deep hacker workaround in Chrome. If you get to a web page and it says that the certificate is not valid and it will not allow you to progress, you can type in bad idea on the keyboard, B-A-D-I-D-E-A, and it will bypass right past it and let you log into whatever you were trying to do. So those Google engineers have a sense of humor.
Is that without a space? Like
just type B-A-D-I-D-E-A, okay. And Chrome will say, well, you must know what you're doing. I'll let you do it, buddy. And it'll let you right in, and it'll bypass all of that fun stuff. But yeah, Snapfish, that was a year and a half ago, and maybe 2 years ago now. It's been a while, Yeah, Superfish or Snapfish. I can't remember which one it was. They were basically acting as a man in the middle and intercepting your encrypted traffic. So bad, bad stuff. So definitely thanks to John for writing in.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about that because Lenovo bought Motorola. And
right.
They are making, the latest phone they've got out, the budget phone, is really strong if you're an Android user.
Well, and their hardware's still pretty nice. My wife just got new ThinkPad from her organization, and it's a nice little laptop, made by Lenovo.
And I do want to point out that not that this is defensible, right? But the Lenovo brand is kind of broken into two categories: retail and corporate.
Okay.
And the Superfish Trojan was not on their corporate laptops.
Oh, just retail.
Now, not that I'm condoning what they did on their retail side, but I do know for a fact that it was only on their retail side that they were doing that.
Well, and it was all about trying to sell ads, right? Like all about getting some of that ad revenue.
It's thinner margins, they're cutting the margins next to nil on, retail stuff, and that's the way they're trying to make up for it is, by selling ads, and they, were doing everything they could to get that revenue. I mean,
right.
It's horrible policy, but I'm not sure that they're the only ones doing it.
Got caught.
They just got caught.
So, that segues interestingly into a story I've got here, a little quickie. This was sent in by one of our listeners, I believe it was Kai, who had sent us a note. And it was, of course, all over the internet last week that rumors are swirling. I don't know if it's been actually officially acknowledged by Google yet, that they are going to be building an ad blocker into the Chrome web browser. Last week, the Wall Street Journal was reporting that according to anonymous sources within Google, they were going to introduce ad blocking built into Chrome on both mobile and desktop platforms. Obviously, ad blockers for browsers are hardly a new thing. Google already pays for access to AdBlock Pluses, etc. acceptable ads program. This is an interesting story because Google is an advertiser, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done. Building ad blocking in is kind of against what Google is making its revenue from. They're saying that the ad blocking will target what they call bad advertisements as defined by the Coalition for Better Ads, including pop-ups, auto-playing ads with sound, page blocking time countdowns, and others. There's obviously a lot of plugins like AdBlock Plus, uBlock Origin, which is one I use and have got nothing but good things to say about, which are available for Chrome, Firefox. I think you can get them for Edge and Internet Explorer. That's kind of a big deal. Google coming out with potentially blocking built into the browser. So I don't know. I mean, is that something that you guys think is ultimately a good thing, a bad thing, or just a thing that the market will adjust to and move on with?
I've seen stories about this, so I think it is real. The one issue that I personally had with the Coalition for Better Ads is they had on the list like ads that won't let you skip them until 5 seconds. And to me, I don't see that as unreasonable. Like, I'm getting content for free. Mm-hmm. I can watch an ad for 5 seconds and then hit skip ad. So, but apparently that's going to be a type of ad that's going to be blocked. And the other thing that you wonder about, especially in Europe, that's a little bit more highly regulated, are they going to be able to get away with this? Because if I'm a European advertiser, I'm going to say, hey, they can't control what ads. They're going to let their own ads through, and they're going to block me.
Mm-hmm. It's a fair question. And yeah, I mean, I know that you guys feel a little differently. I am pro ad blockers. I block every ad I can. I think in the past you both have gone on record saying that you'll tolerate some ads as what you have to have in order for the content that you get. So I don't know. Everybody feels a little bit differently. I guess my one point with the, ads that you can't skip for X seconds, I don't necessarily have a problem if it's, longer form content, but when I go to watch a movie trailer that's, a minute and a half long and I've got to watch a 30-second or 15-second pre-roll, that annoys me. I shouldn't have to do that, but, I guess it is what it is.
So maybe they could do some percentage thing. Like if it's a minute and a half, it can only be 1 second. And you have to be able to skip after 1 second.
Or, yeah. I mean, 5 seconds maybe. I don't know.
I think 5 seconds is reasonable. I don't know. I get the whole ad blocking thing. For me, as long as they aren't obtrusive, I don't mind them. But the kind of stuff that they're talking about, pop-ups, autoplay audio, those kinds of things are just annoying.
And I agree.
So
especially the audio autoplay, that is wrong. That should be outlawed.
Yep.
Well, and it's interesting. So a segue within a segue, but talking about what you were just saying with razor thin margins on the retail side of things. So this past weekend, my wife and I went and became official suburbanites because we purchased a minivan, and in the process of Todd is giving the fist pump.
Misery loves company.
in the process of purchasing said minivan, I came across something I had never seen before, and I didn't have a chance to put anything in the notes about it, but I thought that this was interesting. Jeff, you probably know all about it, but have you ever seen a DocuEdge Pro in your car buying experiences?
A DocuEdge?
Or, I'm sorry, a DocuPad.
Yes.
So, yeah, I had never seen one, and we went in after doing all of the negotiations and whatnot, we went in to deal with the finance guy, and he had a giant slab of glass on his desk that probably had a 36-inch or 42-inch screen on it, and they now, the F&I office does, at least at this dealership, does everything through this DocuPad. And I tried to do a little bit of research on it and couldn't find much at all. It is a wholly owned product. It is under exclusive marketing from a company called Reynolds & Reynolds, which sells basically dealership applications, kind of like enterprise resource software for car dealerships. They have CRM software and inventory management software and sales solutions. It was originally a product produced by a company called CoinData. and then put under exclusive license by this Reynolds & Reynolds. And it is basically a computer that sits on the desk with these pins that you can interact with. And the finance guy can flip through and offer you all of your options and blah, blah, blah at the blink of an eye. And you don't even know what's happening. And then you sign your life away and all of a sudden owe $35,000. And you wonder, whoa, what just happened? But I did a little bit of reading on it, and almost everything I could find came from like industry blogs, industry newsletters, and the sole purpose is to increase profit margin in the F&I division, and apparently it does that in spades. Now, what I thought was interesting in dealing with our F&I guy, I had mentioned, hey, that's kind of an interesting thing. I've never seen one of those before. And he said, the way all slimy car salesmen do, oh, yeah, I just got this the other day. We barely even have had a chance to learn how to use them. And then he was flipping through the thing and scrolling and highlighting like he had been born to do it. So I thought that was interesting. And but apparently it allows them to greatly increase the products and add-ons that they can sell. I don't know if it's because people just don't pay attention because they see something shiny and flashy or what it is. But yeah, it really worked on us. I mean, we went through it and then realized, hey, this guy is trying to sell us something that we don't need. He was trying to sell an extended warranty and hadn't even mentioned the price on it. And just, oh, just sign here and dot here and you'll be all good to go. And we had to call him out on it and say, hey, what is this that you're trying to sell us? And, oh, that's an extra $1,800? Yeah, we don't want that. Take that off. But, yeah, I didn't know if you had come across that, Jeff.
Yeah, I've seen it before. And I think what it does is kind of on the fly allows them to just show you your monthly payment increase. And a lot of people get sucked in because they're like, you know, oh, I can give you this, you know, great warranty. And look, it's only going to add, you know, $4 a month or, you know, whatever. Right. And it allows them to suck you for everything, you know, like you said. But so what kind of minivan did you end up getting? Come on, inquiring minds want to know.
So we ended up buying a Toyota Sienna. Nothing too incredibly extravagant. You know, it's a minivan. I mean, there's not a lot to be said for it. The seats fold down. The middle seat stores in the back. It has a whole bunch of cargo space.
You're skipping all kinds of stuff. What trim level is it?
So it's the XLE. And that means nice. We got the fancy leather. And as you were mentioning last week, Jeff, you know, just I was lamenting about having to go and negotiate and dicker and all of that fun stuff. Yeah. And you said, you know, okay, go to TrueCar, find the number, go in. Anything that you leave on the table is your antacid money. And that's basically what we did. We went in and the price that they had quoted us was a little bit below TrueCar. And it actually turned out that the unit that they had gotten in had a few options on it that we didn't want. And they said, we know this has some stuff that you didn't ask for. We're just going to include it in the price we originally quoted you. So we got like the roof rack and the crossbars, and we got the upgraded, what do we get? We got like the door sill trim and the fancy carpet and some stuff like that. And they still honored the price that they originally quoted us. So we figured, you know, we're not going to fight with them. That's, yep. You know, we were a couple hundred bucks under TrueCar. Yeah, we probably could have argued for another $300 or $400, but at the end of the day, I don't feel like we got too ripped off. So we got the new ride, and it smells all nice, and new car, and all that fun stuff, and it barely fits in the garage, which is something that, surprised us both as to how tight of a fit it actually ended up being.
Yeah, they're big.
Yes.
My wife doesn't like to pull the van in. She usually just parks in the driveway and lets me pull it in. So,
yeah, we've got to come up with some kind of a system, whether it's a laser or a curb or something, because to get the door to close, it literally has to be within 3 inches of the front of the garage where the little built-out is for the furnace and all that. And if anybody out there has ever driven a Sienna, you will realize that you have no idea how much space you have in front of you because of the way it's built.
You don't have a camera on the front of that thing?
Not on the front. It does not have camera.
My Nissan has a camera right in the front. I can just pull right up there and get within millimeters.
That would be nice.
Millimeters.
I don't even know if a front camera is an option on the Sienna. I could be wrong, but
I have no idea.
Yeah, no, it would be a nice feature. It has all the other features. It'll tell me if a car's coming behind me. It'll tell me if there's a car in my blind spot. All of that fun stuff. can't pull the damn thing in the garage.
Yeah.
So yeah.
My solution is a brine tank. I have my one in the garage.
That is actually a darn good idea.
I know. I'm an idea man.
You should market that. I would give you a shiny $5 bill.
I don't think I can buy a pool noodle for $5.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you can if you go to Big Lots.
Yeah, maybe.
I saw this as an interesting article, completely unrelated to anything else other than what with the U.S. saber-rattling against North Korea. But I thought this was really, really an interesting thing. I don't know, have either of you heard of, it was a War Games exercise called the Millennium Challenge 2002.
No, I have not heard of it.
Todd is shaking his head no. So it was a War Games that was staged back in 2002, and it was conducted by the United States Armed Forces, like all of them. They spent $240 million on this War Games, $250 million, that lasted from July 24th, scheduled to end August 15th. So what is that? Less than a month, 3 weeks. It was live exercises and computer simulations. So this was supposed to be a test of future military transformations, a move towards new technologies to enable, quote, network-centric warfare and provide effective command and control of current future weaponry and tactics. So the United States was referred to as blue, and they were fighting an unknown adversary from the Middle East known as Red. Apparently, many lines of evidence were pointing to the fact that Red was Iraq. They were just calling it Red. So they put a, at the time, retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Paul K. Van Ripper in charge of the Red side. And he adopted an asymmetric strategy using old methods to evade Blue's sophisticated electronic surveillance network, such as motorcycle messengers to transmit orders to the frontline troops and World War II-style light signals to launch airplanes without radio communications. And in the space of about 3 days, completely rendered Blue ineffective, sank a huge chunk of their armada, killed over 20,000 service personnel, pretty much completely decimated Blue. At that point, the exercise was suspended, and all of Blue's ships were refloated, and all of the rules of engagement were changed, later justified by General Peter Pace saying, "You kill me the first day, and I sit there for 13 days doing nothing, or you put me back to life, and you get 13 more days worth of experiment out of me, which is a better way to do it." It seems to me like if you get killed in the first day, you probably need to go back and rethink all of your strategies. But apparently Red was ordered to turn on all anti-aircraft radar, which allowed them to be destroyed. They were not allowed to shoot down any aircraft belonging to Blue Force troops. Van Ripper also claimed that officials denied him the opportunity to use his own tactics. They ordered Red forces not to use certain weapons against Blue forces and ordered locations of Red forces units to be revealed. So basically, they just wanted to say, "Hey, look how badly we beat Red." Apparently, it so offended Paul Van Ripper that he walked away from it. Like, said, "I am not participating anymore. Good luck." And he was a retired guy that they had put in charge of this for reasons because he's decorated out the yin yang, I guess. And he decided to have nothing to do with it. But yeah, this happened like just 15 years ago. And shows that maybe the United States is not as prepared as we like to think we are in a war against a country that would use those old-fashioned techniques against us. So I thought that was really, really interesting. And it wasn't just that it was a slight edge and that they were able to use these guerrilla tactics to stay in it. They used these guerrilla tactics and soundly trounced Blue and basically embarrassed the United States Armed Forces to the extent that they had to completely renegotiate the rules of engagement. I just saw this last week. I thought that was amazing. I'd never heard of it before. It obviously got swept under the rug pretty quickly and quietly by the United States Armed Forces.
The first thing that comes to mind is the old scene in the movie Outsiders where Robin Williams runs out of ammo and then he yells over to Walter Matthau, "Hey, time out." "Time out? Yeah, I'm out of bullets. I need to go get some more bullets. You know, you want me to stop and let you go get more bullets so you can shoot more at me? Yeah. Because that's what will happen, right? Oh, if we're in a war, we'll just say, whoa, 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 you guys can't do that. We need to change the rules of engagement.
Okay, time in. I've got more bullets now. Yeah, I had never heard of that
exercise. Yeah, that sounds like the ultimate bureaucracy to me. Like, instead of changing the tactics, if you're blue, you just say, well, let's just change the exercise so that they can't do that anymore to us.
Yes, and then everyone sat around and patted themselves on the back for how clever they were at finally defeating Red after putting all of these arbitrary limitations on them. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, and that actually has a segue into the what I love, which I'll talk about later. But yeah, the fun stuff. We got some other stuff on here. I know I was complaining last week about credit card fraud and that I had somehow been compromised and had to go get a new card and all of that fun stuff and what it entails of having to reprogram your credit card into everything after I'd already done it 6 weeks ago, getting my new chip card, which is supposed to be impervious to hacking. I saw an article that MasterCard is testing a new system to add a fingerprint sensor to their payment cards to protect credit and debit cards. They have a new sensor-enabled credit card that, combined with onboard chips, offers what they call a convenient way to authorize your in-person transactions. Instead of signing paper receipts or entering a PIN, you just put your thumb on the card and it will prove your identity. They apparently are being tested right now as we speak in South Africa, and MasterCard hopes to have them rolled out to the rest of the world by the end of 2017. So that's a pretty aggressive rollout. I mean, we've only got, 8-10 months left really in the year for that to roll out. They do say that even if that happens, you'll still have to wait for your bank or financial institution to get on board. I bank at a credit union, and they were really slow to adopt the chips on the card, so I have no idea how long it would take for them to adopt these fingerprint cards. But the press release I read says that and they make it sound so simple. Once the technology is ready for the public, here's how it should work. Your bank will inform you that biometric cards are available, and if you're interested, you'll go to an enrollment center, which that sounds kind of Orwellian. Please report to the enrollment center. It says most likely a bank to get your fingers scanned. An encrypted digital template of your fingers is stored on the card's EMV chip. You can save up to 2 prints, but they would both have to be yours. You can't authorize someone else to use your card. After your template is saved and your card is ready to be used at compatible terminals worldwide, merchants won't have to get new equipment to accept your fingerprint-enabled plastic. They say that the card itself is no thicker than a regular-sized credit card, and the fingerprint sensor is a small thumbnail-sized rectangle that sits at the top right corner, so it is easily accessible when you stick the card into the payment terminal to use the chip. The terminal asks you to insert the card, and it communicates with the bank information like your identity and the amount of the transaction, and then it verifies your identity by asking for your fingerprint. It reads the fingerprint off of the sensor and sends that information to the card's chip, which determines if you're the owner. And if it is, if it says yes, you're good, it sends a yes or authorized message to the bank, which then verifies the payment and says authorized or declined. So they say it's currently only compatible with the chip and PIN cards, so it won't work on stores that take the magnetic swipe and stripe only, which is still surprisingly a lot of places that I shop. They have those little cardboard things stuck in that says, you know, no chips. So they're rolling that out and, you know, trying to do things to make us more secure. I thought that was interesting, especially in light of the fact that I just have struggled with problems with it myself.
I don't own a MasterCard though. So,
yeah, interestingly, the bank that I use, our debit cards are MasterCard branded debit cards, but most are Visa, I think. I know, yeah. Visa owns a lot of that market. I don't know if I have a Visa in my wallet, actually.
All three of the cards that I use are Visa. Now, our work card is a MasterCard. And so I suppose they could ask me to do that. Otherwise, no, I'm not doing this.
Just because you don't want to switch from Visa.
Well, again, no, it's not that. It's the idea that if a database gets hacked and somebody gets my fingerprint, I can't change my fingerprint.
That's true.
So, no. I this is not something that I put on my phone. This is not something that I'm going to want to use on my credit card. You know, I suppose if they make me do it to use a credit card, then I'll just start writing checks again.
Woo-hoo! You're going to be that old person in line.
Darn straight.
Writing a check. And we're going to hate you for it.
Yeah, but no. But you're right, though. I was just someplace this weekend. It was Marsh. So local supermarket chain here in Indianapolis.
Soon to be bankrupt local
soon to be.
Yeah.
But they would not take the chip. It had to be a swipe.
Really? I mean, they're a fairly large organization. I'm surprised that they're not chip enabled.
They don't have any extra money to put that in.
Well, that's true. What are they just announced they're closing more stores, didn't they?
Yeah. I think so.
You know, that's a shame.
They're not much longer for this world, but, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't shop at Marsh anymore, so I can't really, you know, I'm part of the problem. They haven't done anything to retain my business.
Yep.
So you had some stuff in here, Todd, that I'm curious about.
Yeah.
You had an article, 5 important things Android does better than iOS, to which I say, foo, there is nothing Android does better than iOS.
This is one of my favorite authors at Android Central, Jerry Hildebrand, and he specializes particularly in security stuff. But he is I think he's a former software engineer or maybe a side software engineer. And so he says, or maybe just a regular engineer, I don't know. Anyway, the five most important things that Android does better than iOS. And number one is storage options.
Okay.
And of course, in you know, Android phones, you can get an SD card, micro SD card in most of them, not all, not the Google Pixel, but you do have options there. And of course, you can also do the adaptable storage. So if you want to go for a really budget phone, you can use that SD card as system memory if you need to. Mm-hmm. Number two, dual SIM. So this is not as big a deal in the U.S. as it is in Europe, but many Android phones allow you to put two SIM cards in at the same time. So it gives you two separate phone numbers for calls and texts. And this is something that I would actually like to bring up at our office, because one of the issues that we have in our particular company is if a salesperson leaves, it would be nice if we could reclaim that phone number. So that when the customer calls that phone number, it's no longer routing to the salesperson that just left and went to a competitor. So I may bring this up in the office. Like, yeah, you can still have your personal number. That's fine. But the work number is going to be on this SIM that you have to, you know, trade in when you're done. But
right.
iOS does not support this. Number three, Firefox and other browsers can open links. So with Android, you can decide which app is the default for things like opening internet links on iOS. You can't. Wah, wah, wah. He has number four here. Single sign-in for all the apps that you really use. And this is a bit of a stretch because if you use all of Apple's apps, you know, and just those apps, then you're signed in. But he's pointing out that if you use Gmail, Google Docs, Google Music, movies and TV, everything is just a single sign-in. And you can get into all of those. Go ahead, Jay.
And I'm gonna argue with him on this one.
Yep.
Because if you sign into your Google account on iOS as a system account, you also do not have to log in when you go to different Google applications.
There you go.
Yeah, they've had that for about a year now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So number four, sketchy.
Yep.
Number five, notifications. I can't really compare with Apple, but Nougat handles Apple notifications very well. You can reply in line. So if you get a text, you can just swipe down the field and just type right in to reply and send it. You don't have to open the other apps. So it's a persistent notification system. And while it's a, you know, personal preference or thing, I really like the way Android handles the notifications.
Yeah, I think Android probably still has the edge. Apple has caught up and done a lot with that. You can do the inline replies now for, you know, emails and texts and things like that. But I think that Android probably definitely still has the edge from how notifications are handled. You know, maybe you can speak to that, Jeff, since you carry both on a daily basis. But it seems like Android was probably a little bit ahead when I used to carry an Android, and that's been at least 3 or 4 years ago now.
I don't know that I would say that Android's ahead on notifications anymore. Really? I think it's different. But I don't know that that necessarily means it's better, because the inline stuff that used to be so much better on Android, Apple's caught up with them on that, or stolen that from them, or however you want to look at it. You know, Android has persistent notifications, which is nice, but only because they don't have, I mean, you know, Apple, you swipe across and go to your widgets page, and those are kind of like, you know, persistent notifications. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't know that it's just different. It's not better or worse. But, you know, I think that 3 out of 5 of these, he's right on. I'm not sure on 2 of them.
Yeah. All right.
But 3 out of 5 still, like, you know, if that wasn't a Major League Baseball player batting average, that'd be really good.
So what were you going to say, Jacob?
Oh, I was going to agree with Jeff. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the 3 out of 5 are true. And someone I know just recently, they were still on, believe it or not, an iPhone 4, and it just died. And they upgraded to a iPhone SE, which is basically the form factor of an iPhone 5 with the internal guts of an iPhone 6S. And, you know, they got the upgraded storage option, which costs a lot more money, and it was still only 64 gigabytes of storage, which in this day and age is ridiculous. And
yeah,
if Apple's not at least going to make 64 the entry, then they need to offer expandable storage. I think Android wins, you know, that head and shoulders above Apple.
The one thing that he didn't mention that I still think Android does better than iOS is the idea of the, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, Springboard is what they call it in Apple, desktop.
Yeah, like the homepage.
The homepage, like the flexibility that Android has on the homepage and what you can do there. Just, you know, the grid layout, and that's all you get on iPhone, is just way behind the times. It is just not good.
Yeah.
So, that, to me, like, add that one in, take off notifications, or take off single sign-on, because to me, that is the biggest thing that I like about carrying the Android phone that I carry. I like having widgets. I just do. Uh-huh. And, you know, I still have apps. I can show these guys. I mean, I still have apps in a grid-type style on my Android phone, but I have widgets, and other pages I have just widgets. And,
right.
You know, like having all my audio apps on one page with widgets, and I just flip to that page and I can kind of do whatever I want, is better than switching back and forth to apps. So to me, that's the biggest thing that iOS needs to grow up on. You know, I know that the memory, they're never going to do that. That's just not, you know, the Apple way. Dual SIM, you know, that I don't think that's applicable to us in the US, although I could see some uses for it. The Firefox browser, the other browsers you can open links, I think that's also would be very useful and should be doable. But yeah, the biggest thing for me on iOS is they got to do something with that desktop. It's just, it's very antiquated.
Oh yeah, and yeah. I don't even want a screen full of widgets, but I want arbitrary control over the grid. If I don't want an icon in position, you know, row 3, position 2, I should be allowed to not have an icon there.
And just some of the other things, like, I love Force Press to death. Like, I think it's genius. And I use it all the time for, like, I have a folder that's social, and so when I get notifications, you know, my notifications on that folder pops up, and if you force press, it shows you all the different apps and what you have notifications in, and you can go right there. But how come I don't have a force press on the folder that allows me to go to, like, my 3 favorite apps?
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely.
I mean, they got to do that soon. But, I mean, there are things that they can do, and hopefully they will. you know, you never know, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, iOS 11 should come out this fall.
Oh, and look, go on to the five important things that iOS does better than Android, because...
Yeah. Yeah, before we get there, that was the thing that I noticed missing, and you could argue that it's not important, I suppose, but customization is, to me, an important thing. And obviously Android has that in spades. Like, Nova Launcher is wonderful. I can completely replace the launcher on my phone. I can put in gestures. Go ahead, Jeff.
I consider that part of my whole desktop argument. Like, yeah, the ability that you can change the launcher and how it works is something that iOS needs to you know, go in on. But other customizations like icons and color schemes and things like that, yeah, I mean, you know, I did that, gosh, back in my iPhone 3. I don't know if you remember that, the 3GS that I had, Jacob, and I had jailbroken that. Right. And I did all kinds of custom stuff on that and was drawing stuff myself. And I like that kind of level of customization. So, yeah.
You know, I get that. And I can see the other side of it, because something that I was mentioned on here, I don't know if it was last episode or the episode before last, is that iOS is going to allow in 10.3, developers can allow users to change the icon for an application if the developer supports it. And it is a very manual step where I, as a user, have to go into that setting and say, yes, I am changing this application's icon. And, you know, and at first I thought, well, that's just stupid. If they're going to give us that ability, why can't we skin all of the icons? And I saw an article that talked about the fact that Apple is working to try and prevent a rogue application from putting the Facebook icon on, and then me, as a less sophisticated user, not knowing any better, and clicking the Facebook icon because that's what I clicked to go on Facebook, and seeing an interface that looks suspiciously like Facebook, but, oh, I got signed out for some reason and I just need to put my username and password back in, and then boom, my Facebook account's compromised. So I can see both sides of it. I mean, there are reasons that Apple is making these decisions, but it would be nice if they had a nanny toggle that says, yes, I really do know what I'm doing, and I want to turn these safeguards off, and I'm not going to get fooled by an application that's mimicking as my bank or mimicking as Facebook.
It seems fair that they would let you do it, but you would have to actually go through a step of saying, yes, I want to change the icon. Because probably, I don't know, they know the numbers, I don't, but what, 75% of the people are never going to care about that? So right. They're never going to want that? It's just us geeks that like to play with that stuff?
And I think that's why Apple can safely ignore it. Because, okay, yeah. So they lose out on the 5%, the 2.5%, whatever that tiny little number is of the hardcore, well, I'll never have a phone I can't modify. Well, okay, Apple's not going to miss the fact that you're not a customer.
All right. So the next day, Mr. Hildebrand posted the other side, the five important things that iOS does better than Android. And number one, updates.
Yes.
The way Android and iOS are updated is very different. Google uses Play services to handle many of the security and application compatibility parts of Android. iOS updates don't include every feature for older models, but there is still no denying that updates are handled on iOS better than they are on Android.
Okay. That's fair.
Now, I will say this will be an interesting cycle, because with the current betas of the 10.3.2 something or other, Apple has already dropped support for 32-bit based phones, and I think that there's no secret that with iOS 11 coming out later this year, that they are going to deprecate support for 32-bit phones. So, perfect example, the person I know that just upgraded would still be using their iPhone 4 were it not for the fact that it died on them, like physically died. And, you know, there is some, you know, number of users, a non-zero number, that are going to get locked out when Apple makes this decision. I don't think it's a bad decision on Apple's part. You have to, you know, to continue to innovate and move forward, and you're going to alienate some users. But, you know, Apple has been really good in the past at not doing that, and they're getting ready to lock out a bunch of people when they, you know, completely obsolescence the 32-bit phones.
And that's not just an iOS thing, because I've had this in the notes for a while, but Gingerbread is officially dead as it loses Google Play services support. So even Google is going through this. It's right. About 6 years old, and I don't know, the iPhone 4s are what, that's about right, about 5 or 6 years
old. Probably.
So so, you know, both of them have to do this. And we've seen other vendors, right, after a certain amount of years that just can't afford to support those older versions anymore.
Yeah, and I think the iPhone 5 actually is a 32-bit device. So even a little bit newer, I think you've got to be on a 5S or newer to be on a 64-bit chip.
That's big.
I don't know the numbers that are still out there on people who are on 5s or lower, but, I mean, it's probably in the millions, if I had to guess.
Yeah, that's that planned obsolescence, right?
Yeah.
That's not really fair. I mean, they are,
right?
Yeah.
But it is 5 years old, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think so. Okay. Number two on the list of things that iOS does better than Android: junk apps. And here on this one, if you buy an iPhone from Verizon, you won't have to hide the VZ Navigator app. But on the Galaxy S8, which I did play with my dad's this weekend, and he got his from Verizon, it's a whole folder of Verizon apps. Mm-hmm. And it's confusing. Like, my mom is saying, why is there a Messenger Plus and a Messenger? And, you know, I'm a geek. I know that, okay, that one's Samsung's, and that one's Verizon's, and you probably want to use Samsung's. But this bloatware is, you know, confusing to the average person.
Yeah. Yeah, with the iPhone, wherever you buy it, it has the same exact home screen out of the box.
Yes. So good on Apple for that they're not allowing the bloatware. Support. Apple Care is legendary. When you have a problem with your iPhone, you can just walk into an Apple store and have it taken care of. And Android phones are way, you know, it's all different manufacturers, all different levels of support. So there's nothing equivalent on the Android side.
Yeah.
Now, as an Android, an unabashed Android supporter, I have to say that I'm reminded of the scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I believe. It's Seinfeld. This scene is from Seinfeld, where he is explaining to the person behind the counter, I don't think you understand the important part of taking the reservation. Making an appointment, if I make an appointment for 5, I shouldn't have to wait till 6:30 to see somebody. So Apple Care is okay, but I've had my issues.
It's a good problem to have as a company when you have so many people that want to use your services that reservations are essentially meaningless placeholders. I mean, it's kind of like Chick-fil-A. Have you ever been to a Chick-fil-A that didn't have 11 bazillion people in line at the drive-thru at all hours of the day? I want to be a Chick-fil-A owner.
I walk the Circle Center Mall a lot over my lunch hour. That food court, Chick-fil-A has like 4 times the amount of customers of all the other places. It's amazing.
Print money. I'm telling you. It's a good problem as a company to have.
Okay, number 5 here. Security and privacy. Apple collects data from everyone who uses iOS and does a good job of keeping it anonymous and in-house. Google does the same, regardless of what you might read from other places, but Android has some serious issues when it comes to security and privacy. And we talked about updates are part of the problem, so your Pixel's probably good, but there's plenty of other manufacturers that lag behind on the security updates. And the other part is permissions, he points out. So Android will prompt you, and hey, this app is requesting this and this and this permission. Do you want to allow it? But it doesn't really tell you why. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, this app needs access to your contacts. Why? So they've gotten a little bit better about that, where you don't have to just blanket say this app wants all 7 of these applications or permissions when you install it. You can kind of just install it, and then the first time that the app needs to use that, it'll prompt you then and say, hey, do you want to allow this app, you know, access to your contacts. So they're getting better, but it's hard to argue that that Apple is doing it better right now.
Well, and you know, Apple has had that less granular or more granular method for a few versions now, which is nice, because then I can say, yes, this app can have access to my camera, but no, it can't have access to my microphone, or no, it can't have access to my GPS. But there are some apps that I install that I know, yes, I want you to have access to my microphone, my camera, my GPS, because it's a photo app. And I have to give it three yeses you can, yeses you can, yeses you can. And there's no mode for me to say, you know, this app can have, like, just give me all the prompts all at once and let me go, yep, you can have access to all of this camera app. So, I mean, you got to take the bitter with the sweet there. And I think you missed one in your list. Number four was iMessage.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, I did.
Huge. I mean, there are people that are absolutely, like, 100% committed to the iOS infrastructure because of iMessage. It's a really nice messaging platform.
Completely agree.
And I'm one of those people for my home phone.
Right.
But, like, I don't want to be off of iMessage when the rest of my family is on it. It's a deal.
Yeah, it works so well. I mean, within, you know, my family sphere, at this point, more people are on iOS devices than are not. And, you know, when we've got group texts with family members going, I love it when only the iOS users are participating, because then things happen and you can see deliveries and you can see replies and, oh, I can see that so-and-so is typing a reply. And, you know, when you've got to include one of those pesky Android users and you're like, ah, I might as well just write a note and strap it to a pigeon.
My boss just brought this up because her family went to the Dominican Republic recently, and the same as our family, the dad has an Android, the other three, her and her two daughters, have Apple, and they were communicating over Wi-Fi with iMessage, no problem, just fine. He wasn't seeing any of the messages.
Right, right.
So yeah, iMessage is great. It's encrypted end to end, works right out of the box like that. So that Android does not have an equivalent.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm surprised that Google, with their Allo and Duo and all of the things and the resources that they have, or Facebook and what's, like, I'm surprised that somebody hasn't been able to crack that, but they really haven't. Nobody has been able to crack that like Apple has, at least not in the United States. I know outside of the United States, it's a different ballgame. But here, I mean, for that unified messaging, Apple seems to own it.
Android's working with the carriers on a format called RCS, I believe. But the problem is they would have to get all four major carriers to sign on and most of the manufacturers. So they're working on something, but who knows how long or if it'll ever get here.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the problem when you've got a whole bunch of different players involved, as opposed to, you know, Apple, who has the 800-pound gorilla, and they can force the carriers to do what they want just because they know not having an iPhone is going to cost you 20 million units a quarter or whatever, you know, however many units Verizon or T-Mobile or AT&T is selling.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty fair list. I would agree with pretty much everything on the two lists for the most part.
Just missing customization on the Android list, because I don't know, it is important to me. That's something that I really enjoy.
Oh, I understand. I mean, there's definitely times that I get frustrated that I can't lay things out exactly the way I want to, and you have to have compromises, and I guess I'm willing to live with those compromises and stay in the iOS ecosphere, but I get it. Totally do. And then you got Jeff with the best of both worlds having two devices.
That's right. I live well.
How do you carry two? And this is a legitimate question, because
in my pocket
at my employer, they're trying to push for moving off of personal devices and moving on to a work device. And
yeah,
I really don't want to have to carry two devices. Like
so there are distinct disadvantages. You're carrying two devices. Right. I mean, I don't have any problems in my pocket, but there are also some distinctly advantages, because like this weekend when I went to do stuff with my family and whatever on Saturday, you know what? The work phone stayed at home. I didn't even take it because I'm not working.
Right.
And you're not paying me to work. So I'm unavailable. And when they have your personal number, then you're pretty much available all the time. So there are advantages and disadvantages, and there are people, there are some hoops you can jump through and carry just your personal device at work for me. But I just chose, you know, I would prefer to just have them separate so that I can be separate. It's like, you know, off doing something that is, you know, on the weekend and it's my personal time with my family, then that phone gets left. I don't even bring it with me. So, advantages and disadvantages, of course, but
Yeah, we're just under so much scrutiny on the mingling of enterprise data with personal devices, and they're making it just almost impossible to use a personal device with enterprise data. And I understand.
It's very difficult where I work too to do that, and it wasn't worth it for me to jump through all the hoops, because basically what you have to do is if you use your personal number, you can get your number back, but you can't get the device back. So if you were to leave the company, even if it's your own device, so like I said, look here, I have this shiny iPhone 7 Plus, and this is my device, and I just want to keep using that. They'll be like, okay, that's fine. But if you leave within the time that contract still exists, we're taking that phone, and you're not getting it back.
Really?
Oh yeah. So yeah, I mean, it's just not worth it.
Do they have to buy it out? Like, how does that work from a legal standpoint?
You sign an agreement that you're willing to hand over your phone to them.
Yeah, two devices it would be if I was in that same situation.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Huh. Well, gentlemen, I think we're probably at an hour. We could keep doing stories, or do you guys want to wrap it up for tonight?
I'll give you a fun fact that I found out on Friday real quick.
Love fun facts.
Microsoft Excel. So I went to the seminar on Microsoft Excel because it basically is my life when I'm at work. And this gentleman that taught the class, Mr. Excel, he gets to meet with Microsoft development team like once a year. And so Microsoft has the data, right? So there are 750 million Excel users worldwide.
That's it?
40% of those users have never entered one formula in Microsoft Excel.
What?
How about that?
40%. So almost half of 750 million users have never entered a formula.
Not one formula. You know what that means, Jacob? That means that 40% of Excel users work in marketing.
Well, you say that, but there was a lady who, I'd call her a sweet lady, but she really wasn't, that I used to work with. She was a lady. Let's leave it at that fact. And one day I happened to be at her desk trying to help her troubleshoot something, and she was keying in a list of numbers and then got out an actual honest to God calculator with a tape on it and was keying, and I watched her do it for a few seconds, and then she keyed, 10 keyed, la 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 la, click, 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 click. And then it printed out the number, and then she went to the cell and typed in the number. And I realized she's 10 keying all of these numbers that she put in Excel that sum them up. And I said, well, look, if you click here, and she's like, uh-huh. And I said, you click this little funny looking E, right? And she's like, uh-huh. I'm like, look, it'll add it for you. Oh my God. The wind could have flown a kite for a year. Like, she didn't even know that was a thing. And I'm like, how do you work in an office in 2015? I guess I was even a little bit longer than that, 2011, and not know that that's a thing that you can do. Seriously.
There are plenty of people that do not realize that.
That's amazing to me. Of course, I will say the first time I saw someone do a pivot table, I had to pick my jaw up off the table and go, whoa, whoa, back up a step. What did you just do? Teach me how to do that. Because there is a lot that Excel can do, and it is amazing. But wow.
40%. Tom, did you say you have them printed on your bed sheets?
I may be guilty of that.
You've got to love it, and you'll appreciate this, Todd. I years ago, I actually looked in the notes in my macro. It was in 2012, April of 2012, in fact. So it was exactly 4 years ago. I helped a coworker build an Excel macro that has grown into a beastly monstrosity, and it was designed to connect to a Microsoft SQL Server and do a bunch of SQL commands and then process and create pivots and consolidate data and help them simplify some stuff. And I have had to help him get this now working, connecting to an Oracle database. Holy cow, is that a pain in the butt. But I am not an Excel guy. I am not a programmer guy. And I am now in charge of almost 4,000 lines of VBA code that I barely understand, and I somehow wrote 4 years ago, and by golly, if I haven't been able to make it connect, and I still don't know quite what I did, but apparently the data gods were on my side.
4,000 lines is a lot for VBA.
It really is.
Should check out, I don't know what version of Excel you're on, but Power Query, they've brought out, it's built into 2016 and it's free for 13 and 2010. But it does a lot of great things that you used to have to do macros for. And even better, it actually documents them.
Oh, that would be nice.
Shows you step by step automatically what steps it's going through. So the next time the internal auditor knocks on your door, you just say, "Oh no, here it is, right here. Just launch this pane. Here's all the steps."
Yeah, we don't have 2016 yet, but that would be a fun fact because honestly, probably half of the time spent converting it to talk to Oracle has been going back and forth with my user saying, "Okay, now we made it do this 4 years ago. Why did we do that? Oh gosh, right. I don't remember. Let me sit and think about." I think it was because of X, Y, and Z. Oh, okay. So now we need to make it do that only speaking Oracle's language. So good to know. Power Query. I'm going to let
Power Query. It's great stuff. I can do a whole show on Excel, but I won't bore everybody.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up and let everybody get back to their day. Jeff, what do you love?
So I'm going to pick Disney's Moana. I did not catch it in theaters, but purchased it a couple weeks ago when it came out and have watched it now a couple times. I know we talked a little bit about it. It's Lin-Manuel Miranda. And the music is just outstanding. I really enjoyed it. I found personally that I heard a lot of people talk about a specific scene in it that they didn't enjoy. I didn't find it too horribly bad. I mean, it wasn't my favorite, which is the crab scene. But I thought it was really well done. And gosh darn it, if I just don't have the biggest man crush ever on Dwayne Johnson. So I want him to be my friend. I want him to come over and watch football with me on Sundays. Why has this not happened?
You know, he's one of us.
He's one of those celebrities that I would be devastated to learn is actually like a jerk because he seems so genuinely nice.
Jacob, he's a geek.
Is he?
He played Dungeons and Dragons growing up.
Well, that makes me feel a little bit better. I'm not making
this up. He's like a geek that broke out and you know, made it as an actor and a strong guy, action guy, actor even.
Well, he's not the only one, because the guy that played the werewolf in True Blood, he was Joe Manganiello. He's also a big geek. He was a Dungeons & Dragons guy back in high school.
So that's my what I love. Check it out. Good movie.
Now, you know, you said that a lot of people, or some people at least, have criticized the crab scene. Now, I will say this. The crab is voiced by, I think it's Jermaine Clements, who is half of the Flight of the Conchords comedy music duo out of New Zealand. I love anything that he has done, has in. So I actually liked the crab scene quite a lot because it was Jermaine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, two thumbs up. It's a great movie.
So, hey, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. I got to run.
All right,
I'm being called. So, goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, so, Jacob, what do you love?
So, you know, what I love, I've been sitting here thinking and, you know, just bought a new minivan. And I would say the new minivan, but that is out of the reach of anybody not looking at a minivan. And let's face it, it's a minivan. It's kind of hard to get excited about a minivan. I'm sure, you know, in a few months when I have to load something that won't fit into anything else I own, I'll be really, really excited about it. But it's a minivan. So I'm going to say I saw a movie this past weekend on pay-per-view that I vaguely remember last year seeing trailers for, but didn't know that much about going into it. And it is a movie called Hacksaw Ridge. And it turns out it's a good little movie because it was nominated for like every major award that there is. It was up for Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor. And it is the true story of Private First Class. Let me get my notes here because I'm going to mispronounce his name. Desmond Dawes. And he was in World War II. And what's interesting is he was a conscientious objector. He actually went into the war and would not carry a weapon, would not fire a weapon, would not take a life. And so this is a story. Now, I don't know how much it's been Hollywoodized, but in actually reading about the real Desmond Doss, there was stuff that I read in his bio on Wikipedia that was not in the movie. And I'm like, how could they not put that in the movie? The man was insane. And he is credited with, at the very minimum, of single-handedly saving and lowering 75 wounded servicemen off a 400-foot escarpment during the Battle of Okinawa over a period of several days. And completely unarmed, like just him up there with the Japanese soldiers shooting at him, finding and saving guys. So he is the first and I believe so far only conscientious objector to ever receive the Medal of Honor. It's a fantastic movie. It is. It was directed by Mel Gibson, and it stars Andrew Garfield, who I believe is the Spider-Man 2.0 or 3.0. It also has Hugo Weaving from the Matrix in it. He's in it. There's a few other people that I kind of recognize but couldn't put my finger on. Surprisingly, it has Vince Vaughn in a serious role, which you just don't see very often. Directed by Mel Gibson. Some of the war scenes are just incredibly over the top. My wife had actually commented while we were watching it. She said, I didn't expect it to be so extreme, like the war scenes. And, you know, I've never been to war. I hope I never have to go to war. Just from the little bit I've read about, you know, World War II and how awful the fighting was, like, this movie is brutal. Like, it really makes you feel like how utterly helpless and against the odds these guys were. Really, really good. I highly recommend it. I've mentioned to several people since watching it, and they all said, oh yeah, that's a great movie. So Hacksaw Ridge, I definitely would recommend giving it a look. It's out on video on demand everywhere now. I think it probably would be available to pick up on Blu-ray DVD real soon if it's not already. It's quality film, especially if you're into World War II stuff, and just an amazing story. So that's what I love. How about you, Todd?
Very nice. Well, I have something a lot more mundane. I have the Logitech Performance Mouse MX. So this is one that the wife actually recommended to me, and I've been using it for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, and it finally broke. And so I tried replacing it with a gamer mouse, the Razer, which is really pretty, and it turns different colors and such, but it doesn't fit my hand right. I really love the way that the MX feels, and so I ordered another one off of Newegg. I ordered the expensive one. I think you can get them for $50 or $60. I got the 2.4 gigahertz because I'm just an elitist jerk like that for about $77. But really like the way it feels in my hand, and I can play Diablo 3 for hours and not have a fatigue. The Razer definitely was a little bit more accurate, but I found my hand getting tired after, you know, just half an hour, 45 minutes. So for gaming or just office use, the Logitech Performance Mouse MX is my choice.
So, you know, I remember playing the twitchy shoot 'em up games years ago, and you needed, you know, the high resolution, like 4,000 DPI, only connected via wire mouse and all of that. And yeah, it made such a huge difference, especially for like the twitchy, you know, like Doom and Quake and all of those games. For like Diablo 3, do you need a super twitchy mouse? I wouldn't think that would make as big a difference.
And I don't think so. It's 5 years old for one. And number two, there's so much stuff going on the screen. You'd be surprised how many times you actually lose track of where your cursor is. So the fact that you can just point it right directly at something may not matter if you can't see it.
That's kind of a big deal. Although it doesn't have all the fancy colors.
And the most important thing in, you know, Diablo 3 is player versus enemy. You're not player versus playering, and that's right. Where I think the very specific pinpoint mouse clicks come into play.
Yeah, I've definitely lusted after that the MX. It's nice. I've never spent the cash on that. I've got a cheap Logitech And by golly, nobody seems to make wireless mouses, wireless mice like Logitech. They are just pretty much unbeatable.
Good point. No, awesome. I agree. All right. Cool. Well, thanks everyone for listening to episode number 124 of a No Better Than Average show. We'd love for you to contact us on our call-in comment line, 317-643-1212. Tell us what your favorite mouse is. Tell us what important thing that you think Android or iOS does better than the other one. Or you can send us an email, feedback@nobettershow.com. We read all those. You can tweet at us at No Better Show. And finally, you can like us on Facebook, No Better Show. And we would sure appreciate you going out to iTunes, giving us a 5-star review. Tell your friends, tell your coworkers about us. It's you know, all kinds of tech and science goodness. So thank you for listening. And now we hope that you know better than average, too. Talk to you later, everybody.
Have a great week, everybody.
See, I'm actually, I've got to write this down, 33 minutes. I'm having some technical difficulties. My browser won't scroll.
Your video's way
your
out of sync.
Your video's real out of sync.
I just realized my computer is...
a bad Chinese movie.
Oh, yeah, I see it. Yeah, it looks terrible. What the hell?
It was pretty cool, though, because
I will
like
fight now, and you will be dead.
You were talking about the closet, the wood, and you were like taking a drink. I'm like, damn. That's awesome. You can drink and talk about the closet.
Well, for my next trick, what the heck is going on here? I think Chrome is pooping itself. Let me try and close a couple of tabs real quick. Hang on.
One of your 2,472 tabs.
I have a lot of tabs. That is true.
People always complain, oh, Chrome's so horrible. It doesn't perform well at all. How many tabs do you have open? Oh, you know, 400 or 500.
I probably had about 35 or 40 tabs open. I will admit, that is all me. There we go. It seems to be scrolling a little better. My video's a little better. Not much. Try and close a couple more of these.